Hello and welcome to Bowery Poetry Speaks, an audio series of talks and performances from our special Bowery perspective. At Bowery, we start every event with an Honor Native Land statement. We would like to acknowledge that Bowery Poetry Club rests on the traditional lands and waters of the Lenape people, and we give respect to the Lenape and their elders past, present, and future by speaking in the Lenape language, Anushik, which means thank you and welcome. Anushik.
In this episode, host Joe Williams speaks with Spanish author Carmen Martinez Pineda. Joe began by asking Carmen to introduce herself.
Gracias, Joe, por darme esta oportunidad. Un placer para mí estar contigo, con todos vosotros. Bueno, pues mis influencias literarias. Yo soy profesora de literatura, entonces mis influencias son muy variadas, desde influencias clásicas, influencias.
Thank you for this opportunity. It's a pleasure being here with you. Well, my literary influences. Well, I'm a teacher of literature who works within my literary influences. These vary from classical literature, medieval literature, and contemporary literature. Regarding contemporary literature, I believe I gain a lot from South American works. There's a lot of influence from Gabriel Garcia Marquez, from Vargas Llosa, from Juan Rulfo, from Latin American literature, and from Spanish literature as well, but not really from English language literature, I feel. Within Spanish literature, my biggest inspirations come from poets like Salinas, Garcia Lorca, and also storytellers like Delibes and Cela. Basically, a lot of authors from the realist tradition, like Galdós, and more recent authors like Almudena Grandes. So there really is no one single influence, but I do think that my literature comes mainly from narrative and also poetry. For me, lyricism is vital, because lyricism is a strong part of life. That poetic outlook is the key to poetizing results that are initially prosaic, mundane, and cruel. And I believe that's a crucial aspect of my literary influence.
One of the main themes, one of the main subjects I'd like to focus on in the interview is your recent novel, Hijos del Pecado, which would be translated into English as Children of Sin. I've read the book and I loved the book. I've got a very high opinion of the book. But rather than have me try and introduce it, could I ask you to develop some of the things that you were saying in your introduction and explain to us more specifically about this book in particular and what your intention was with the book?
Bueno, Hijos del Pecado es una historia y cuatro historias al mismo tiempo. La historia de cuatro personas que pertenecen a cuatro generaciones distintas de una misma familia, una familia muy humilde, de una clase social baja.
Well, Children of Sin is a story. Well, four stories at the same time. The story of four people who belong to four distinct generations, all from the same family, a working class family from rural Spain, who live in their distinct time periods. But the situations each generation faces resemble each other in certain ways. They feel they do not have the liberty to do as they please and live the lives they want to live because they feel alienated by society due to conventional societal standards, traditional expectations, and old-fashioned attitudes. They become shunned by society for not following the path that is socially accepted. I don't think there is time to discuss the story of each character, but Juan Antonio, for example, is a member of the oldest generation of the family who flees from a concentration camp after the Spanish Civil War and finds refuge in the caves of Andalusia to join the anti-Franco guerrillas. Then there's the story of his niece, Concha, who lives after Franco's counter-revolution, fully in the midst of Francoism. She's ostracized, bearing the stigma of being a single mother in a context of society strongly governed by traditional values and expectations based upon Catholic morals and doctrines. There's also the story of Concha's daughter, Candela, who during the transition to democracy in Spain, as well as the story of Concha's nephew, the son of Candela and Guinness, who lives from the beginning of the 1990s towards the end of the 1990s, and also the beginning of the 2000s, and wrestles with the burden of not being able to express openly his sexuality and is censored and ostracized for being homosexual.
Católica es la historia de su hija Candela, que pues vive en la época de la transición a la democracia española.
The constant switching between time results in each character's story becoming entwined together, implying that, regardless of time, each character inhabits a society that is suffocating, a society that impedes them from being happy. And this is where the title Children of Sin comes from, because every character feels stigmatized and outcasted after being subjected to Judeo-Christian concepts of sin imposed by society. Well, the concept of the novel was to reflect precisely how, in rural environments, society is not as integrated and accepting as is commonly perceived by people from cities. Society advances with different rhythms, right? and modernity and modern ideas will arrive much later, and also social behaviors are often atavistic, more characteristic of earlier time periods. We live in a time period where attitudes to certain situations seem like something from the 1940s, because society advances at a slower pace than that of big cities. And that was my intention, to project that, although time passes, we still feel that we are victims of social stereotypes and behaviors that impede us from being happy.
You kind of confirmed some of the things, some of my ideas, some of my thinking about the book, that one of the subjects, one of the things that the book portrays and represents is kind of how human experience, especially working class human experience, can kind of stay constant, can stay the same across generations, despite the kind of semblance, the appearance of societal progress. In on a fundamental level, or at least on some level, working class people live lives which are still quite frustrated and quite inhibited, and they're having their personal relationships and their intimate spaces kind of infiltrated and conditioned by systems of power, by political power, by religious power, by societal attitudes, also just kind of a general kind of social conservatism, which kind of prevents you from expressing aspects of your identity, your personality, your sexuality, and things like this. So I'd like to talk more about that later.
Sí, bueno, Concha, como he dicho, es un personaje, uno de los personajes protagonistas, es el personaje de punto de vista fundamental, indispensable de la novela en torno a la que gira buena parte.
Well, Concha, as I said, is a character, but the main character she is, from a fundamental point of view, an essential part of the novel around whom much of the action revolves. The novel starts with an event occurring in August 1999. This is a momentous and traumatic event, which touched me very closely because it was something that happened near my neighborhood. And it is the death by suffocation of Concha's nephew, a 25-year-old man with mental disabilities who was morbidly obese. The death was due to the lack of awareness and help from his family, who did not realize what was happening. The first chapter is told from the perspective of Concha, who, as I said, is a fundamental character. It's very difficult to give a summary because it is a short chapter of just 5 or 6 pages, but it remains a constant stream of consciousness throughout. All the action is mediated by the character and by her psychology. So that the reading finishes at a logical place, I have chosen to end at a turning point in the stream of consciousness, and there's a pause.
Las campanas no cesan de repicar. Concha sacude las orejas para espantar el recuerdo. Pero el recuerdo persiste. El recuerdo que le traen las campanadas y también la ultraja, con el regusto a mondongo que queda después. Las amenazas de los guardias civiles, el cuartucho sin luz, la peste encierro y el insulto, solo uno, pero caliente, cerrado. Puta. Que ya podían usar otro de vez en cuando, piensa Concha. Que cuando un hombre quiere ofender a una mujer, siempre se anda con la misma cantinela. Como si no fuera eso lo que les gusta a ellos. Que les meneen el culo y se la pongan tiesa. Desgraciados. 3 días la tuvieron encerrada en el cuartel. Sin abogados de esos que se ven hoy día en la tele. Que antes por menos que robar un perre gordo, se los llevaban esposados. Sin miramientos. Soltando algún sopapo se amagaban réplica. 3 días sin hablar con nadie. Haciéndole preguntas con esa voz de las cavernas, presionando, como el zorro que se mete en el corral en busca de gallinas. Las gallinas son idiotas, ahora mismo sin ir más lejos, todas peleando por el mismo grano cuando los tienen apuñados en el corral, que repican más que las campanas. Pero Concha no, ella aguantó. ¿Qué se pensaban? ¿Que iba a aflojar? Porque ella podrá ser muchas cosas, pero no idiota, que podía haberle salido un poco ella a su hija, en lugar de tener esa mente de barro por la que se le escurren las ideas, siempre por ahí, con la lengua de paseo, portaleando, de casa en casa, casi la una y todavía sin llegar. Querrá que su marido le haga la comida, o que se la haga ella, gandula, aunque no es la única con manos flojas para trabajar, porque gandules en el vecindario hay para aburrir, como aquel, su vecino Jesús, asomado por la ventana, se creerá que no lo ve, con su pose estirada, con su radio en la oreja, que trabajar le ha gustado poco, pero empinar el código TIEAR, eso es distinto. Eso no exige tanto esfuerzo. Siempre acechando, con los ojos como pinchos clavados en ella, para gritarle que ese también le gusta insultar y ofender un ratito largo. Que si cochina, que si guarra, que si cerda, con esa lengua de alacrán que Dios le ha dado. Total, porque me unía una chispa en los rosales, como si Concha no supiera abrir las piernas para no fallar, como si no calculara bien dónde echar el chorro, que ni se moja los mulos porque bragas no lleva. ¿Para qué? Son un estorbo, un criadero de bichos. Las partes delicadas, mejor el relente. Ahora se ha vuelto fino el señorito remilgado. En la cárcel tenía que haberse podrido, por rojo. que no entiende ya cómo lo soltó Franco. Bueno, sí lo entiende, porque se arrimó a la que se arrimó y porque el cura sí dio buenas referencias de él. De él sí, a otros un puntapié en el culo para que llegaran rápido a la fosa. Malnacidos, cuánta muerte sembraron con sus delaciones. Y luego haciéndose los minsos, con esa voz empalagosa de arroz con leche, estirando las manos como si fueran a tocar a Dios, con esa cara de bobos que tienen todos. Como el nieto mayor, su Vicente, ahí siempre enganchado a la tele para ver la misa. Lo que le gusta al rito ese también, que si hubiera salido listo, se le hace lo menos papa. Pero la criatura nació con esa mente de viento que no retiene nada. Ahí todo el santo día en el sofá, dándose cabezazos, meneándose y meneándoselo, que no deja el muchacho de darle trabajo a la entrepierna. Que se descoyunta la nuca, mamá, le decía al principio su hija, que se nos mata. Y Concha la miraba sin saber muy bien dónde ponía la vista esa hija suya. ¿Qué parte de su cuerpo de elefante le inquietaba? Porque qué ímpetu mañanero, qué brío más gratuito para darse gusto. ¿No lo ves, mamá? ¿No ves que no para de dar brincos con el cuello? Ángel descarriado, lo mal repartido que está el mundo. Aunque no fuese una sorpresa para nadie que el crío naciera con retardo, al menos no para Concha. La herencia está ahí, bien larga y bien gorda, que tampoco su hija le salió lista del todo, que si el nieto desvió la ruta, la otra le allanó el sendero.
Chapter 1. Chicken Feed. August 1999. The bells keep ringing. Concha rattles her ears to frighten away the memory, but it persists. The ringing bells, bringing back a memory which infuriates her, and the relentless aftertaste of guts lingers. The threats from the civil guards, the lightless barracks, the stench of confinement, and the insult, just one, but heated, hard. Whore. They could use a different one every now and then, Concha thinks. When a man wants to offend a woman, it's always the same old song and dance, as if that's not what they like, to have women wiggle their arses for them and make them hard. Bastards. She was locked up in the barracks for 3 days, without the kind of lawyers you see on TV nowadays. They used to drag people off in handcuffs without a second thought for any old petty pilfering. Slapping them if they didn't come quietly. 3 days without talking to anyone, questioning her in that cavernous, echoing voice, turning the screws. Like the fox that enters the barnyard in search of chickens. Chickens aren't idiots. Right now, right there in the yard, they are all fighting over the same grain, when there are handfuls of them in the pen sounding louder than those bells. But not Concha. She held out. What did they think, that she was going to fold? She may be many things, but she's not an idiot. If only a bit of her could have been passed on to her daughter instead of that thick head of hers that holds ideas like a sieve, wandering constantly from house to house with her tongue wagging. It's almost 1 o'clock and she still hasn't arrived. She wants someone to make lunch for her, either her husband or Concha. Such an idler. Although she's not the only one with work-shy hands. This neighborhood's full of layabouts. It's ridiculous. Like that one, her neighbor Jesus, leaning out of the window. Does he think she can't see him? With his holier-than-thou airs, his radio in his ear. Hardly ever does a day's work. Prefers to stick his elbow out and gossip. That's different. That doesn't require so much effort. Always stalking around. His eyes fixed on her like spikes. To shout at her. Because he also likes to go on and on, dishing out insult and offense, calling her a dirty, filthy, slutty pig with that scorpion's tongue that God has given him. And just because she goes for a piss in the rose bushes, as if Concha didn't know how to open her legs without messing it up, as if she didn't know where to aim, she doesn't even get her thighs wet because she's not wearing underwear. And why not? They're a nuisance, a breeding ground for vermin. Now the prissy little gentleman has gone all refined. He should have rotted in prison for being a red. She can't understand why Franco let him go. Well, she does. Because he got close to whoever he got close to, and because the priest put in a good word for him. For him, yes. To others, a kick in the arse, so they'd get to the grave faster. Scumbags. God knows how many deaths are on their hands, those snitches. And then going about like butter wouldn't melt with that voice. Stretching out their hands as if they were going to touch God with that stupid face they all have, like the eldest grandson, her Vicente, always there, glued to the TV to watch the mass. How much he loves the rite, too. And if he'd have come out smart, he'd have become the Pope, at least. But the creature was born with that empty head and can't hold anything. All day long, there on the sofa, banging his head, shaking his head, and wiggling. The boy never leaves his crotch alone. His neck is going to dislocate, Mum, her daughter used to say. He's going to end up dead. And Concha looked at her without knowing where that daughter of hers was looking, what part of that elephantine body was making her uneasy, because what morning revelry, what an indecent display to indulge in. Can't you see, Mum? Can't you see how he keeps tossing his neck around? Poor lost angel. It's the world that's a mess. Although it was no surprise to anyone that the baby was born handicapped, at least not to Concha. The inheritance is there, so long and so broad, that her daughter didn't come out all smart either, if the grandson strayed from the path. That other one had already paved the way.
Many thanks for reading. You just heard Carmen Martinez reading from her recent novel, Hijos del Pecado, Children of Sin, which is available now on Raspa Books, and hopefully at some point in English translation. As you can kind of tell, I think, as this conversation and as that reading should have hopefully given a sense of, this is a very ambitious novel. It's a very panoramic novel. It's a family saga that spans generations, and it kind of explores the way in which human relationships and family relationships and romantic relationships and friendships are sort of conditioned by societal attitudes, institutions, political power. And it also does very interesting things in terms of narrative technique with lots of flashback and stream of consciousness and a real radical lack of linear narration. So it's quite a long-winded question, but basically how did that all kind of come together? How did you kind of arrive at this as a very ambitious and very literary and very original form or narrative technique?
Como bien planteas, una de las claves fundamentales de la novela es la técnica narrativa, ¿no? Yo decidí deliberadamente en no contar la historia siguiendo un orden cronológico. Quise en todo momento alternar la historia de estas cuatro generaciones.
Okay, as you correctly point out, one of the vital aspects of the novel is a narrative technique. I deliberately decided not to tell the story in chronological order. I wanted at all times to alternate between character stories, depending on their time periods, as I mentioned before. And I did it this way precisely because I wanted to reinforce a certain idea, one that is the novel's fundamental theme, namely social stagnation, the stagnation that is experienced in rural areas and different time periods all within the same country. So then all the problems that each character faces in their distinct historical moments are fundamentally the same. It's a novel about oppression and frustration, the feeling of being socially or politically persecuted, the feeling of being ostracized and not being able to be happy due to social restraints, and that restricts us from reaching our vital objective, no? And for me, that was crucial, to integrate their stories and alternate the past with the present, making extensive use of flashbacks. Because doing that weakens the boundaries between past and present, condensing temporal space in the novel, lapses in time disappear, and becomes clear that all the characters are repeating the same situations which frustrate them in their search for happiness. And that's the essence of the book's narrative technique.
El lapsus temporal desaparece en la medida en que todos vuelven a repetir las mismas situaciones que los han frustrado en su propósito, en su anhelo de ser felices, ¿no? De ahí esa técnica narrativa. Quizás sí, lo más complejo para mí de la novela fue la técnica narrativa, porque está muy
perhaps the most complex part of the novel for me was the narrative technique, because it is very heavy, very thoughtful, very meditated, and most of all, I wanted to use fewer words and instead project bigger ideas. And that was because I wanted to avoid a linear narrative technique where significant details could be avoided and instead focus on a narrative that focused on the significant and relevant scenes, heavily influenced by each character's decisions. And that is difficult to accomplish. The difficulty is that you don't include every detail and have to select which passages to include and which scenes are vital to the stories so that the reader does not get lost and stays within the proper trajectory. A trajectory that was still whole but simultaneously excluded pieces so that the reader could be a part of the story by reconstructing the missing spaces from each character's experiences that were never defined, to count those situations that were indispensable from the lives of the characters.
you kind of echoed, or at least, I don't know, confirmed some of the inferences, some of the interpretations that I had when I read the book about the thematic unity, that combination of sort of thematic unity and temporal lapses and temporal fragment, that it seemed to be kind of working together to imply, to kind of suggest that time is not the most significant distinction, or that the differences between generations are kind of superficial, that essentially, even though these different generations are inhabiting superficially different social and cultural contexts, a lot of what informs their experiences is fundamentally quite similar, in that they're experiencing frustration, they're inhibited, they're being prevented to express themselves authentically. A lot of this due to, especially in the, this was one distinction I wanted to ask about actually, was the earlier generations are much more political. A lot of the conflict is much more political. And perhaps the later generations who have kind of grown up in democracy are less political. And what divides them is less political and more about culture and identity and society and just attitudes and mentalities rather than actual political conflict or so much economics. They're less politically conscious in a way. Was that your intention?
Sí, efectivamente. Es que yo creo que somos seres sociales y políticos y estamos imbuidos.
Yes, indeed. I think that we are social beings. We have the capability to think politically and resonate with the internal political environment. I think that in Spain, in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, there were many important political conflicts. The Civil War and a heavy post-war leading to the characters to become strongly impassive. Juan Antonio is a character who lives in the Second Republic. He is a character who is aware of his social class, who demands his rights, who militates as a trade unionist, a political representative, a worker who defends his rights at all times even though he is at the bottom of society. He is fighting in the Civil War and is fully aware of the political turbulence he's experiencing. Simultaneously, his life journey and his personal circumstances are necessarily influenced by the political situation he faces, and he ultimately makes the difficult decision of leaving his family to fight in the war on the anti-Franco side. And that story, which is a quarter of the novel, contains a political driver that does not necessarily apply to the historical situations faced by the later generations of this family.
Ajeno a la turbulencia política que está viviendo. Entonces, su periplo vital y sus circunstancias.
I am from a generation who hasn't felt the need for vital political urgency. We may be a little more politically unaware because we haven't known a life without democracy. We grew up with democracy. But at the end of the day, we are political beings, political animals, and the politics are always there. But the most political characters are those who experience and grow up in the traumatic events resulting from the Francoist dictatorship and the Spanish Civil War.
The other kind of dimension to that is that although the transition to democracy has taken place, and obviously that has solved a lot of political problems and made a lot of improvements to people's lives, people are still struggling with some of these these old-fashioned societal ideas and attitudes about things like sexuality and gender role, and this kind of really deforms and mutilates and damages some of the characters in the book, and that stays constant across generations. That seems to imply that even when you shift political structures, even when you affect political change in terms of regime changes and things like this, even if you have a democracy, culture can sometimes be more durable than actual political power. Sometimes attitudes kind of persist. They live on, like repressive and regressive attitudes to sexuality and gender roles and this kind of thing. There's not necessarily a political solution to them.
Sí, sí. De hecho, como ya he comentado antes, mi propósito fue reflejar la idea del estancamiento.
In fact, as I said before, my purpose was to reflect the idea of social stagnation that is experienced in certain areas of my country, specifically rural areas. And while society moves at a different pace, and therefore I needed to tell the story in parallel, interspersing all the stories without logical order, to convey the idea that, despite the passage of time, problems don't always find an appropriate solution. And even though there is a generational chasm, time seems to be stagnant, and it seems that the same problems continue to be met with the same solutions, creating a kind of cycle. So in the story, we see characters suffering in silence due to their homosexuality. I don't want to give any spoilers, but one character lives during the times of Francoism and the other during a time of democracy, yet both characters still have to hide their sexuality. And this is something that, although it seems paradoxical, it continues to happen, and especially in the generation I belong to. When I was 20 years old in the late 90s and early 2000s, homosexuality was frowned upon and not accepted in rural areas and small towns of Spain. It was something I always noticed in my youth. Maybe it was something that happened less in big cities, but it did happen in the small towns. And of course, it happened in all countries. But in Spain, there's a generational divide within the big cities and rural areas that do not advance at the same pace. It's a 30 to 40-year-old difference in terms of social advancement and acceptance.
Supongo que ocurrirá en todos los países, pero en España hay un abismo generacional entre las grandes ciudades y las zonas rurales. Y no se avanza al mismo ritmo. Y hay una diferencia de 30 a 40 años de diferencia.
And that is what is reflected in the novel, because the novel is entirely located. One location is a region of Spain called Murcia, which is a region of the Spanish Levante, the Spanish Mediterranean. And as I said, in the 90s, there was a clear generational divide due to the situation in rural areas, while in the big cities like Madrid and Barcelona, homosexuality was more socially accepted. It surprised me a lot when I moved from Murcia to Madrid for university at the age of 18. And suddenly a new unexplored world appeared to me, completely alien to me, one that dealt with these kinds of social problems. In the small town where I grew up, this was inconceivable. And above all, there was a possibility of being able to enjoy freedom. No one knows who you are, no one criticizes you, no one singles you out for what you do or don't do. During the 1990s, within rural areas, it was still a deeply rooted practice to be vigilant and censor those who did not conform to society, to be stigmatized and ostracized by the leaders within that society.
Yes, lots of different dimensions and aspects to conflicts between generations and region and class and political identity and religious identity. And the book encapsulates all of that in a very dense kind of world. It encapsulates, it's a really rich, kind of dense, ambitious book. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. And on this subject then, it does remind me a little bit of a book that I featured on the program earlier this year by Elena Medel, Las Maravillas.
Pues no he leído el libro Las Maravillas de Elena Medel y lo voy a leer. Y más sabiendo que tiene similitudes con mi novela, es, cualquier coincidencia es...
Well, I have not read Elena Medel's book, The Wonders, but I will read it now knowing it contains similar characteristics to my novel. It's a coincidence, however, as I have not read it, but I will read it. I have not read it, I will read it now that it has sparked curiosity from what you have told me. But with citing contemporary authors, I think I've cited some favorite authors of mine I really enjoy, like Almudena Grandes, who is an indispensable realist author, and who also addresses and exhaustively critiques the civil war and the post-war dictatorship. Fernando Aramburu, also. I really liked his novel Patria, especially his use of flashbacks to disrupt temporality in this novel. And for more contemporary authors, well, someone whom I enjoy very much, who works within the genre of crime/noir fiction, but which still contains social criticism, is Victor del Árbol, who I read a lot. Despite the fact that he is considered a crime fiction novelist, his work seems to contain social critiques and likes to step back in time. He seeks to alternate a lot between the past and the present, and present the present as the result, as a consequence of a series of past events. And he also reflects on the Civil War period a lot, as well as the post-war period, and the dictatorship, as well as the interwar period in Europe. There are authors I read more of, and there are authors I read less of. But I would say those three are the ones who have had the most influence on me.
Yeah, the final question then. So are you currently working on any other writing? Are you writing any more books? Do you plan to publish anything anytime soon?
Bueno, pues hace poco terminé una novela que todavía no se ha editado. No sé si la publicaré.
Well, recently I completed a novel that has still not been published, and I'm not sure if I will publish it because it can be difficult to publish in the Spanish market. It is called Clay Dolls, which was a finalist in a literary prize for social criticism. And it is a story that hits very close to me because it is a story about a crime committed against an adolescent in an institution, and problems begin to arise. And to me, as someone working in education, it hits very close to home, as it revolves around acts of bullying in schools. And well, now I'm working on this novel bit by bit, though it is almost complete. It is a very ambitious project, and it will be a while before I'm finished. And as I'm currently working as a teacher, I have severe time limitations, and I have not been able to get back on with writing it as much as I'd like. But now this summer, I hope to finish it. I just need to implement that final push to get it finished. It is a novel that has similarities to Children of Sin, consisting of alternating stories which disrupt linear time, and it has a complicated but valuable plot that has taken up a lot of time to put together. So the project is a bit stagnant, but I hope to finish it soon.
Well, we look forward to hopefully seeing some new books from you in the future. I know I do. I'd love to read some more of your work. Thank you very much for joining us today. It was a real pleasure.
Gracias a ti. Ha sido un placer conversar contigo y compartir este momento.
Thank you. It was a pleasure speaking with you and spending this time to have this conversation with you.
This has been Spanish author Carmen Martinez Pineda focusing on her recent novel, Children of Sin, available in Spanish language from Raspa Books. We also heard a bilingual reading from the novel, translated by Joe Williams, and performed in English by me, Andrew Singer.
You've been listening to Bowery Poetry Speaks, an audio series of talks and performances with that special Bowery perspective. This series is executive produced by Traffica Europe Radio. Thanks for listening.